Welcome to the 12th House Podcast. I'm Michelle, your co-host and the head witch in charge here at Holisticism. Delighted to have you. Welcome back to the squirrels who have been here before, to our new squirrels. Hi, how's it going? The 12th House Podcast is a little corner of the internet where we bring together creativity, inspiration, intuition, spiritual shit, the metaphysical, the practical, tactical stuff that comes to running a business. And we bring it to you so that you can do your sacred work, so you can self-actualize, so you can be the biggest you could possibly be. It's really fun. You're going to like it, I think. Anyway, let's get into today's episode. Linnea, hi. Welcome to the 12th house. I'm so excited to have you.
Yay. Thank you so much for having me. So good to talk to you.
I mean, as always. And we have to come clean. We've been already talking for 30 minutes. So
I'm glad you said it.
We're all about being real on here, you know? And I'm so excited to talk to you always and forever because we've known each other for now, like kind of a really long time, dude.
Super long time, yeah.
It's kind of wild. And I really love that it's coming back full circle, but you're back to Gooey Girl.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was a brief stint, to be fair. I did change back to just at Linnea Sims, okay. But I did have my moment, yeah, where I returned to the Gooey Girl moniker.
Yeah, so let everyone know what you're up to right now and kind of how you exist in the world.
Yeah, I would love to. So I, as you know, recently finished my master's in community, liberation, indigenous, and eco-psychologies, which is exciting. I'm happy to be out of school. And I've been taking the last few months to myself to kind of recalibrate and figure out how I want to show up in the world with that work. So I'm doing a bit of liberatory coaching right now, one-on-one, mostly with creative professionals. Cool. And I'm also looking for work and trying to do things related to events programming and strategy, trying to kind of share decolonial values with more communities.
So cool. What was your biggest learning from your stint getting your master's? Not stint, oh, wow. From your time getting your master's.
What a question. My biggest learning. I mean, as we were discussing, I think on a personal level, realizing that academia is not for me, just really realizing the lack of alignment between mm-hmm. wanting to practice decolonial values and being in a colonial institution is really hard. Mm-hmm. That was the biggest one on a personal level, but on a kind of academic level and on a research level, I think what I felt most passionate about was this concept of a thirdness consciousness, and that's largely what my research was about and something that I think I'll take with me forever, which is essentially just the idea that we're kind of always moving between worlds as people, and that perspective, if we can tap into it, really allows us to build more compassion and empathy for people who we think we don't know anything about. And, you know, basically what is the potential of that perspective to help heal the division in our world is a question that I sit with a lot.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah.
I feel like we sometimes forget that we have really good imaginations as human beings. And if we like really sat for a second and like imagined what our life could be like or imagined another person's perspective, like we probably could do a good job of understanding them, you know, or relating to them.
Yeah, it's just about a practice of reflexivity, right? And like, I just wrote a paper about this, so I can be a huge nerd about it if I
please.
Want.
But. Oh my God, please, nerd all over me. That's one of my favorite things.
I mean, it really is about like a practice of recognizing that as individual people, we really are only in our own world when we're alone. And you could even argue that even then you're not, right? Yeah. But as soon as you're around another person, you have entered a new space and a new world. And so how can you kind of hold like your own personal world while recognizing that you're in a world with another? And when I think when you practice that, you're really able to kind of hold this space where you can see all of the potential for different perspectives. You can kind of really easily visualize like, oh, there's a gap between myself and this other person or this other group of people. Even if they're people you're close with, there's still a gap in how we understand the world. And if you can hold that, then nothing is personal. Nothing is, you know, really even like a threat to you in any way. It's just simply a difference. Yeah. And so I think it really is about honing that perspective. Everything starts with perspective.
Wow. Well, so listeners at home, we had to turn off our videos because of Wi-Fi. And while you were talking, Linnea, I was picturing in my mind like elements, you know, like a medical or a metal or a compound or whatever physical thing. And when we sort of like alchemize it, or when some variable is introduced and it changes, and it, yeah, it's never like its purest self, like whatever. Mm-hmm. Neon like never exists alone in a vacuum, unless it's alone in a vacuum. Otherwise, it's always connecting or interacting with, you know, the other elements around it in the air, and how that's basically us, right? And like, we're either interacting with one other thing, one variable, or like a million variables. And gosh, like even thinking about that gives me so much more compassion for myself, of like when I'm in a place with a lot of things and people and not feeling like myself and then beating myself up about it. It's like, you're interacting with a shit ton, man. Like there's a lot happening here that's also like out of your control.
Yeah, absolutely. And as squiggly brain people, as you like to say, I think we're extra sensitive to those kind of stimuli, right? And like, we really feel the effects and the sensitivity of being around other people or being in different environments. Mm-hmm. And yeah, having compassion for ourselves is a huge first step in being able to kind of take a step back and reflect upon like, oh, maybe this isn't about me, or maybe it's like, you know, like I said, not personal, or, and even in like a positive light, like, oh, this is really cool that I get to kind of interact with all of these different elements right now. And in that process, I am transformed.
Yeah.
And everything around me is transformed. Yeah.
It makes me kind of think of spirits too, you know, like of energy. Mm-hmm. And how when you walk into a space, like the energy can be different and it can change you. Or if you are interacting with what you feel like is a spirit or a ghost or something, an entity, how you explain that away, or if you embrace it. And Linnea, this is going to be totally selfish on my end, but I started really seeing ghosts lately, ever since I had Rhodes. And I've been so interested in clocking people's responses to when I'm kind of like upfront about it. And let me know if this rings a bell with you. Like, you're definitely into the spiritual world and the energy world. And I remember coming over to your house and you pulling a tarot card for me from the Voyager deck. Like, you're no stranger to sort of like alternative spirituality. When you explain it to people, or when you like, let's say, rattle off something about astrology to someone and they're not as dialed on it as you are, or perhaps they don't believe in it, how do you kind of like approach that?
Yeah, it's funny because my immediate reaction is like, I don't care. Like, first of all, I mean, I totally get it. I also see ghosts and have since I was a kid, but I think my entire family does. And so I think I was raised in a culture where we talked all the time about the spirits that we were seeing, or the energies of a space, or, you know, various ghost stories. And so I think I grew up feeling like it was really normal.
Yeah.
And I didn't learn probably until like high school, and I started sharing these things, that not everyone was like that. And I don't know, weirdly though, I've never felt self-conscious about it. I think I had, because I've had that experience growing up, I knew it wasn't wrong or bad. I just knew that it was like what I saw and what I felt. And I think because I grew up with it, it was totally normalized.
Yeah.
And so now if people, I mean, I just, I'm like, okay, you're on your own shit. You're on your own path. Like, you're not there with me, and that's cool.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But have I felt judged? 100%. Yeah.
Right.
People get freaked out. Yeah, totally.
Has anyone ever tried to like explain, quote unquote, to you like, oh, here's actually what you were seeing, or here's actually what astrology is, or why people
believe? No. Do people do that to you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I remember the first time when I was talking to my sister, I was like, oh yeah, so I saw this ghost and then I heard it. And she's like, did you change your medication? Like, is it possible that you are on some medication and it changed and that's why you're seeing these things? Like, immediately looking for an answer other than, you know, sort of what I'm presenting at face value. And there's nothing.
Yeah.
That's totally fine. I'm not holding that against her at all. But
yeah.
What do you think?
I think it's funny that, you know, I see that when you told the story. I'm like, oh yeah, I get it. Like, people do want to jump into this mode of like jumping to any other conclusion besides the one that maybe feels like the one they can't fully understand, because maybe they haven't had that experience. Or I think people obviously are really freaked out by the idea of seeing ghosts, because that's on a larger cultural level what we've been taught is to be fearful of them. Mm-hmm. So I totally get that. It makes sense, right, that people would respond in that way, because they see it as a threat. And so they want to, it's almost like they want to help you to not be scared of it, even if you're not scared of it, and they don't realize that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Totally. Yeah. And I think the same thing can happen often when we talk about spiritual stuff, where to be like accepted, we have to write it off as what some people might call as like woo-woo or crazy or, yeah, I'm just like a weirdo. I'm just like a weird little freak who loves astrology. Right. We kind of can't like claim it, or we have to type it off as silly, you know, like, oh, this silly thing that I believe in. I know it's dumb.
Yeah.
So I'm really curious if you have ever done that, and because you've had a long sort of like experience and being a public person who talks about creativity and spirituality, have you ever at one point kind of like played down your beliefs?
Oh, totally. Yeah. What first came to mind was I recently, when I was still living in Santa Cruz, I was hosting a Reiki circle and doing Reiki at a sound bath every week.
Cool.
And I hadn't practiced Reiki publicly before that time. And, you know, being in a room full of strangers, I was like, how do I explain this so that people don't think I'm totally creepy? Because I'm like, so what's going to happen is I'm going to channel a life force energy through my body into your body. And I felt so vulnerable saying that. And I did start to feel really nervous before every single time, knowing that I had to explain it to people and like watching their blank stares.
Yeah.
So yeah, I totally get it. I think it's way harder when you have to be in a room with people you don't know and you're like, okay, so this is what I believe. And I'm now going to like practice it on you.
Yeah.
That's super vulnerable for me. Yeah.
Yeah, I totally catch myself doing it. I think to make myself and what I think a little bit more approachable and inclusive to people, but like around tarot or pulling cards, I'll say, you know, oh, you can interpret it as like a spiritual message, or you can just interpret it as your unconscious mind is creating connections and pulling up some, making some meaning out of the imagery that you see on these cards, just like when you're looking at art. Yes. Or you're watching a movie. Just kind of like hedging it so that someone doesn't immediately write it off and think of it as stupid or, you know, crazy or something like that.
Yeah. Well, and I think that that's valid too, though. I mean, making it accessible for people is ultimately our goal, right? Like we want people to have access to these tools. And when I was doing Reiki Circle, it was like, I was always really adamant about like, you don't have to think about it as like an energy coming through your body. You can think of it as just gentle, loving touch. It's still going to work. And so I think meeting people where they're at is really important, and not putting your own version or vision of what the practice is onto others is also important, because it is going to show up differently for different people. And I think creating room for that does bring more people into the practice. And ultimately, that's all that matters.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Gosh, you're so smart. This is why I had to have you on for this concept, because you are just like the Venn diagrams of all the things that you're interested in. They make you such a profound thinker on this concept, I think, in particular, that we're here to talk about, which is cultural relativism. So when we reached out and we were like, can you come on and can you talk about this thing with us? What did you think? Like, what immediately came up for you around cultural relativism?
I was like, I mean, what first came to my mind immediately was a lot of the things I learned in indigenous psychology. Mm. I think that is what really made all of those concepts click for me.
Yeah.
Because in indigenous psych, we talk so much about the fact that indigenous cultures see the psyche in such a different way than the Western world does. And for so long, of course, because of colonization, the Western idea of the psyche has been imparted upon indigenous communities and in communities of color in the States and in other Western cultures. And it's just so inappropriate. It's so inappropriate to apply those ideas onto these communities who see the way the mind works in a totally different way. So that's what came up for me just because of my own research and interest.
For anyone listening who's like, what the fuck is cultural relativism? Basically, it's this view that a culture can really only be understood and judged by the behaviors, the norms, the values within the context of that culture. Mm-hmm. And we can't judge, let's say, in indigenous psychology through a Western lens.
Right.
We can't judge what's appropriate in, I don't know, in Canadian culture and society via the way people in Taiwan exist. Like they're just, they're different. And one isn't good or bad or better or worse. They just are. Like there are plenty of cultural experiences that perhaps would be deemed like to your point, inappropriate or dangerous or even abusive by one mm-hmm. culture's standards and practices and by another. That's just how things are done. And I mean, like,
yeah.
damn, we could talk a lot about the United States and a lot of the atrocities and horrors and wars that we've fought, ignoring cultural relativism, trying to go in mm-hmm. as saviors to people who don't necessarily want to be saved. But that's not exactly why we're here today. I kind of want to talk about cultural relativism more from this like sort of psychological and I guess spiritual perspective.
Yeah, what came to my mind just now when you said that is that idea of the thirdness consciousness again, right? Like this idea that we're traveling in through worlds all the time. There's a philosopher named Maria Lugones who wrote about world travel and this idea of like having a playful attitude as you world travel. Mm. And coloniality does the exact opposite of that, right? It goes in, like you're saying, into cultures where the norms are very different and says, no, this is how you should behave. These are the standards. And in that way, there is no thirdness consciousness there. There is no awareness of the world travel. Mm-hmm. And in that way, it's like a literal world travel, right? Like people, literal colonizers coming to different places, traveling to different places, and then applying their perspective without having that lens of, wait, I'm coming from this world and now I'm in this other world. And like, there is a distance here. And like, what is that distance? Like, what is that third space between me and them? Mm. And really acknowledging that. And what I think the whole practice of cultural relativism does is it allows us to recognize that third space. But if you're not engaged in that practice, then yeah, you get into a lot of trouble trying to assign standards to people that never signed up for that shit.
Yeah. Oh my God. And it's so uncomfortable, right? Because mm-hmm. like our minds want to find answers and just like to continue, right? Our brain wants to assign meaning and understanding and to organize things so that it can feel safe, right? Like, I don't walk through the world like scared of a sprinkler when it pops up because I know that like I've categorized sprinklers as something that's safe for me, like that's not going to kill me. So I can like
right.
go through my day, right? And we do that all the time. Like, we make these heuristics and these sort of like sweeping quote unquote understandings or generalizations around something to just deem whether it's like dangerous or not dangerous for us. And that can be good because then we're not sort of like triggered by every single thing that happens to us all day long. But it also, it eliminates a lot of the nuance around our experiences.
Totally. Yeah, it does. We exist in a world that requires us to constantly be categorizing and constantly be labeling for exactly the reasons you've named in order to be safe. And of course, that's like inherent to the human experience to some level. Mm-hmm. But then there's another societal level, an ontology that we've been taught through a colonial lens that says that we have to do that with people. We have to do that with certain types of people. We have to label them in certain ways so that we can feel safe around them.
Yeah.
And I don't even mean like necessarily on like a racial level or a sexual orientation level where like we're afraid of certain people. I also mean like even in our interpersonal relationships, we might put people in a certain box and think of them in a certain way because it feels safer to keep them in that kind of space. When we talk about it on that level, we have to realize that that is a choice. We have options as to how we decide to interact with people. And we've been taught to interact with them in that one specific way. But that is, of course, very much so deemed by what our cultural norms are, which, of course, come from a colonial lens. I know I'm annoying about coloniality, but it really does.
You're not annoying really at all.
Impact everything.
No, you're not annoying at all. And that I had never thought of it that way, that, you know, sort of like assigning an understanding of a person, first of all, like, is fake. Because I can, let's say, assign to my partner, Ethan, that like he's a safe person and that he would never hurt me and that he's reasonable and measured when he makes decisions. But like, I can't control him. Like, I could walk into my house today and he could be like in a violent rage. I doubt that would happen because I know him pretty well. But like, my brain wants to think I know him really well. He can change whenever he wants. And
yeah, totally.
That is like really scary. That is really scary or not scary. It's overwhelming to hold mm-hmm. that people can be completely different. Situations can play out in a completely different way than you're expecting them to at any time.
Yeah. And on a positive spin on that too, I think the expectations that we hold of people if we allow them to shift, they can surprise us, right? They can, people who we might think are unfeeling towards us or who could never understand, you know, our feelings, if we have an expectation of them that they will, then we might approach them in a different way and might create a different outcome.
Damn. I did not think we were going to go in that direction, but I really like it. really like it. I mean, cultural relativism has endless doors, like doorknobs we could open. And one that I think about a lot is spirituality versus scientism. I talked to this amazing person a couple years ago who taught me that scientism is like a way of thinking, not that science is like the ultimate answer all the time. It just is like right now culturally. And I've noticed this come up a lot when I talk about my sleep paralysis experiences with people, or even talk to my doctor about it. And, you know, I have researched sleep paralysis, and the night hag is one of those cultural beliefs that comes up around it, or the devil on your chest or the witch on your chest, depending on what part of the world you're in. It's sort of a phenomenon that's worldwide. But my doctor, although they can't explain it, might say, oh no, that's just a night seizure. We don't know why it happens, but you know, it happens to you. so
what? Wow.
Yeah. Isn't that wild? Like it just, or like you're dreaming it. You're totally dreaming it, even though you're not, or your body, your brain is awake, but your body's not awake yet. Like what the fuck? Why? And they can't explain why. They're just like, I don't know. It just is, you know? And I'm curious for you, after going through this program, and it sounds like your study of indigenous psychology, psychiatry probably like touched on this, spirituality versus scientism as like sort of that cultural relativism. How do you approach what's a spiritual belief in one culture versus what can be explained away, quote unquote, via science in another?
I mean, that's a big question. But I think like what your experience made me think of, also, I have sleep paralysis and I've been there, and I also have had the experience of trying to explain it to people and they're like, what are you talking about?
Yes. Wait, do you see anything when it happens to you?
I don't have the sleep hag or the witch or anything like that, but I have hallucinated. Like I'll hallucinate that I hear Cameron in the house and he's not home.
Yeah.
Or like I'll hallucinate that like my dog's on my bed and she's not, that kind of thing.
I just got chills.
Yeah. It's a lot. It's and it's like the same, you know, it's the feeling of like, yes, your brain is awake, but your body's not. I think that is kind of like the best that science can give us.
Right.
It's not useful because it's like, why? To your point. But I think what it really highlights is how much science is unwilling to grapple with the things that it can't explain, and so willing to just write those things off as a strange phenomenon or like a one-off experience. And like, therefore, it is not necessary to understand further.
Yes.
Which I think is really odd. Like, it's still happening. It's still something that we like, people want to understand their experience better. Mm-hmm. So why are we not trying to understand it? Slash, also, maybe we don't need to understand it as much as we think we do, right? Because of this kind of idea that our culture is run by this scientivism. Like, we talk a lot, talked a lot in my program about the idea that psychology is an evidence-based ontology as it exists in the Western world now, right? Like, we just want evidence for everything, and we want to be able to, like, have the numbers to support every idea. But in indigenous cultures, of course, like the approach to the psyche is much more spiritual, and is the approach to life in general is much more spiritual. And it's accepted that there are many things that we just simply don't understand. There are many things that are up to the will of the universe, to the gods, and that the spiritual element of life is an incredibly, incredibly critical one. And yeah, in our Western culture, we totally disregard that, which is, I think, why there is such a resurgence of interest in spiritual practice, especially in people of our generation. Because we're all trying to go back to those roots, I think. And that's something I think is important to note, is like, people hear indigenous psychology and think that it's for modern day Native Americans living on reservations, right? And that's not the case. Like, we all have indigenous roots. Every single person in the world has roots that trace back to before colonization and before industrialization, where we all lived in small communities and supported each other. And so that's what we're really talking about, is not necessarily a return to those times, because that's not possible. That's not what decoloniality is. You can't return, but it's more about how do we embrace the values and perspectives of our ancestors and of our cultures in the modern world where colonization has already happened, you know? Mm-hmm. And so part of the way that we do that is by just embracing a more spiritual perspective on life and less of a scientific one.
Mm. First off, well said. Damn, dude. And it's so hard to even get away from evidence-based understanding or evidence-based spirituality. One thing about me is that I am very, very lazy. And it's confusing because I'm really good at working really hard. But in my core, in my soul, I'm really a slug. I'm a slug on the sofa. That is my true calling. And the more often I can be blob, the happier I tend to be. And so, you know, running a business doesn't necessarily like work cohesively, isn't necessarily synergistic with big blob energy. But I found it's actually like more doable than one might think. And that's why I created Creators Cashing In. Creators Cashing In is one of our Notion for Magical Baddies classes, meaning it's taught live inside of Notion, and you get tons of Notion templates to go along with the course. It's our Notion for Magical Baddies class that I created for the creators among us who make content and want to get paid for it. If you're a writer, if you're a podcaster, if you're a teacher, a guide, if you're someone who wants to run a community or has a community, but you haven't figured out how to make it a fair energetic exchange for the work that you do, Creators Cashing In is for you. And really, like I said, I'm lazy. The reason I created it is because these businesses, while so fun, can be really emotionally exhausting and really just like time intensive, especially if you're unorganized and you don't see how everything comes together. And for the nonlinear thinkers among us, myself included, that part, getting it all organized, prepped, systematized, can be really, really difficult. And in the muddling through every single day and always feeling like you're behind deadline and like you're not making enough money and like you're not sure if the next step that you're making is the right one, not only does that just objectively suck, scientifically, it makes your creativity plummet by, you know, at least 400%, allegedly. And the point of Creators Cashing In is to help creatives like you and me, nonlinear thinkers, get organized, get clear, and monetize the incredible content and knowledge that they're already sharing with the world. So good news, Creators Cashing In is open, doors are opening, and I would love to have you in the course. I won't be teaching this again for at least another 6 months, but it's one of my favorite things to teach, and there's a ton that I've added into the course this time around. So if you're thinking of running a digital course, selling digital knowledge working products, building a community, monetizing your podcast or your email newsletter, this course is for you. I'd love for you to join us, and you can learn more at the link in our show notes. I'm studying mediumship right now, and my teacher is an evidence-based medium. So like, they practice evidential mediumship, which means they find evidence or they give evidence that they've connected with someone who's passed in your life. And that's very valuable. And that's a great way of doing things. But even just this conversation makes me question, like, well, why do we need to like know exactly what the name of their dog that they had when they were 17 was in order to like accept a message from beyond, or like accept that we have connected with the spirit of someone who we used to know? Even our spirituality, even I would say, like, you know, identifying with astrology, like, oh, that's totally me, or that's actually not me at all. I don't identify with that. I don't have evidence to believe, to prove that, you know, applies to me, like, is somewhat based in scientivism or scientism and evidence.
Yeah, 100%. That's where it gets tricky, right? And that's where I think, like, a decolonial perspective is really helpful, because it's not saying, like, you know, don't acknowledge the Western ideas at all. We live in the Western world. Like, you know, there's a level to which we all have to engage with those things. I mean, there's no clean answer, right? Like, we all kind of have to individually pick and choose which elements we're going to buy into and which ones we're not going to.
Yeah.
And yeah, we have to kind of develop our own ethics for figuring out which ones really feel like they align with our values and which ones don't.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a lifelong process.
Yeah. And you just finished your master's degree in a Western institution. And we were kind of talking about how if you come to the determination that like sort of the Western perspective of therapy and psychiatry isn't in 100% alignment with your beliefs, like where does that leave you if you want to continue to study that or help people? Or even like, you know, the way that the education system works now in higher learning, like, is there a way to have a more democratized or decolonized education system or learning hub or community or network? How do you think about cultural relativism, I guess the future of cultural relativism when it comes to learning and passing on knowledge?
Yeah, 100%. I think about it a lot. And the solace that I feel is that it's always changing. It is always evolving.
Yeah.
Right? Like in my program specifically, all of the founders of my program, not all of them, but most of them are still teaching in the program and they're old, right? They're going to retire soon. If they haven't already, they're going to retire soon. And I think about the people who are in my cohort who were such amazing revolutionary thinkers being the new guard that's going to eventually replace them. And so I think just in those generational shifts, things are always progressing, which is really great. But I also think it's really important, like I was saying to you earlier, to step out of those systems and to take that knowledge elsewhere, if that's what you feel called to do, which is why I'm leaving. I just feel that I'm not, for me personally, continuing to feed into the academic system is not fulfilling. For me, what I always went into the program with was this intention to take the ideas and to figure out how to translate them to the general public. Because I just really, like we were saying earlier about how you kind of invite people into spiritual practice, it's the same thing. Like, I want to invite people into the practices of liberation in a non-academic setting, because that's where most people are. Most right. people are out in the world, not sitting in institutions and just thinking about these ideas. So for me, I think it's about like, finding ways to really embody and embrace these concepts in our daily lives, in our workplaces, in our families, in our friendships, in our romantic relationships, in every interpersonal engagement that we have, to really embrace these ideas, and on our own, of course, like with ourselves.
Yeah.
So that's something I'm super interested in. I'm actually going to start a new newsletter soon.
Yay!
Called Living Liberation, exactly about that.
Oh, I can't, first off, can't wait to read it. Excited for that. And last question, kind of double clicking on a bit of the last part that you said. When it comes to cultural relativism, you know, and the West, Western perspective, you know, we pathologize, right? We diagnose behavior or worldviews or whatever that doesn't sort of fall in line with what we deem appropriate at any given time. And, you know, in another culture, in another world, in another time, someone who might be viewed as a seer or a healer or a knowledge holder or a shaman is pathologized as someone who's bipolar or depressed or anxious or some insert other diagnosis here. Mm-hmm. When it comes to ourselves, sometimes it can feel really powerful to claim something like, oh yeah, I'm experiencing depression right now, or I'm depressed, mm-hmm. or I have anxiety, or I'm neurodivergent. And I wonder, like, yeah, but is that true? Like, mm-hmm. is that real? Right. Big question to end with, but how are you grappling with that right now? And I guess, like, where do you stand in this moment, kind of like working through that? And what advice would you give to someone who maybe has identified themselves through a diagnostic that they're open to changing or evolving from?
Yeah. I love this question. I think my gut reaction to what advice would I give is, it's more of like, what question would I ask? And the question I would ask is like, is that useful to you? And I think 9 times out of 10, the answer is no. And that's been my own experience of like, I've had so many diagnoses thrown at me throughout my life, and I've tried really hard to understand my brain to a point that it makes me feel crazier. It makes me feel worse.
Yeah.
Because I'm constantly trying to parse out like, oh, well, am I this way because of ADHD, or is it depression, or is it this, or is it that? And, you know, lately, the way that I really think of it and what I sit with the most is the idea that we're all just nature and we're all just animals. And I don't know, that brings me such relief in so many ways when I think about like a flower, a patch of flowers, and how they're all different, right? None of them is good or bad. none of them is worse or better. They're just all different. And I know that that's like a super basic analogy, but it is really very true, right? That like at the end of the day, your brain is your brain and it works how it works. And getting to know it and understanding what supports you and what doesn't, and being able to do that in a joyful, easeful way, it's just always going to feel more joyful and easeful than sitting there and trying to figure it out and trying to parse it out and trying to, you know, make it into something that is quote unquote understandable or comprehensible for who. It's like in service of what, you know? Is it really in service of me if I can label myself as being depressed or anxious? No, it's in service of a psychological system that I don't even believe in. Mm-hmm. What is in service of me is being able to say, my energy's low today. Maybe I need to rest. Or I'm feeling like there's been a long phase here where I've been really quiet. So maybe like my focus is like trying to kind of go into my center and figure out what's best for me in my next steps. And honestly, I find that as I practice this, and this is relatively new to me, it's something that I've been trying to practice more, I think, since I started my program 2 years ago. But as I've practiced it, I've just found so much more peace and acceptance with myself and being able to understand my natural ebbs and flows. And yeah, it just is easier at the end of the day than trying to constantly figure myself out. Mm. So that's what I always offer to people. It's what I offer to my clients. It's what I offer to my family and friends. It's like, maybe you just need to figure out what your own pace is and go at it instead of trying to fit yourself into some sort of label that is never really going to make sense because it was never really appropriate to begin with. Mm.
Damn, dude. Yeah. I think I've been obsessed my whole life with like trying to understand myself and our purpose in the world, like why we're here and creativity and connection, like connection to source or inspiration or whatever, I guess, life force, whatever moves us. And in turn, also obsessed with the things that take us away from that, that like make us feel disconnected, even though we're always connected. And what you're describing to me sounds like, yeah, that our natural state is that. It's not like even quote unquote accepting who we are or finding compassion for ourselves. It's just being. It's just like being and noticing. And unfortunately, a lot of the life around us pulls us out of that and distracts us from it and doesn't give us the spaciousness to be in that groove. Like having a job, for example, where maybe you can't tell your boss, like, I'm a little low energy today, so I'm going to like go inward.
Right.
Like capitalism doesn't offer us that option all the time. And so it's kind of this constant wave forward and back of how do I just come back to the knowledge that is true? Like, how do I just come back to what I know is there when there are a lot of elements that are trying to push me out of it?
Totally. Yeah. I totally hear that. And what I would offer to someone who is experiencing that is like two things. One, I think try to move at the pace of life. And I say that all the time to people. And what I mean by it is like, we are pressured to move at the pace of capital, right? And to constantly be on and urgent and stressed. And I think, yes, those things make it difficult for us sometimes to believe that we can slow down. But I don't think that they actually mean we have to be moving at that pace all the time. And I think it's possible to show up and do the things you need to do while allowing yourself room to be human. You can show up to the things you need to do and be low energy. I do this all the time. I'm like, okay, I have to get this shit done today and I really don't feel like it, but like, can I not feel like it and still do it? You know, like, can I like be low energy and like be introspective and do the task? Like, I don't have to put on a performance for anyone.
Yeah.
I don't actually have to pretend like I'm feeling differently than I am. I can still feel how I feel and do the thing and trust that that's enough because I am human.
Yeah.
That's the practice that a lot of us need to practice more, myself included.
Okay. So how can everyone sign up with coaching for you? Because holy shit, you're really good at it.
Oh, thanks. It's just my website, man. LinneaSims.com.
And when, not to put you on the spot, but newsletter opening soon.
Hopefully in the next couple of weeks, I'll get that first one out.
Hell yeah. Are you going to do it on Substack?
Yeah, it's going to be on Substack. It's already set up. And so you can subscribe to that also on my website. It's just right on the homepage. And yeah, you'll be the first to know about it if you sign up now.
So exciting. Linnea, I love you. I just think you're so cool. And
I love you too.
It's such a pleasure to watch you from afar because we don't live in the same city as you just like live your journey and your path. And whether you're sharing every day or every 6 months, like it's just, you know, it's just a gift. So thanks for being you in the world.
Thank you, Michelle. Right back at you. It's so cool to see how holisticism has grown and how you've grown through it. It's really an honor to witness.
Well, thanks. It's I feel very lucky, as I'm sure that you do, that we just live in this time where, like, that we get to do this, you know, like, that we can, like, publish this show. And no person can be like, don't. I mean, they can, but I'm not going to listen to them. It's just cool, you know, that we get to make our own choices. And it's our job to investigate life. Like, damn, that's fucking sick.
So cool. Yeah. We're doing the work. We're out here doing it. I love it. I love to see it.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And we'll talk soon.
Amen. Thank you for having me.
The 12th House is produced by me, Katie Dalebout, with theme music by Nathan McKay and edited by the incredible Softer Sound Studio, who you can find more information about in our show notes.